can at least start the tape, and, or start the internet. Let's start the internet first.
Okay, it's, everything's on.
You're okay.
I'll come right over here.
I'll never get this.
Here, right here, Jerry. I'll sit up. Yeah, I am. But Kevin's sick too, so I'll sit down here by him, all right?
I'm pretty sure we had the exact same thing. Good idea.
All right, for those of you listening into this, we have two people with colds here, and so I'm staying far away from those guys. Anyway, this is Commissioner Susan Wiefald. I'm opening the informal hearing. It's April 23rd, 2008. The informal hearing is on case number PU06466, the Otter Tail Corporation Renewable Generation Rider application. And before we go any further, I'll identify who else is in the room besides myself, Commissioner Susan Wiefald. We have Commissioner Kevin Kramer. We have from our staff, Mike Diller, and also Commissioner Clark is not with us today, but he'll be reviewing the record of this informal hearing. We have staff member Jerry Lane, and we also have staff member Tom Rafferty. And next I'll go to Otter Tail to identify who is here for their company today, and then we'll come back to Commissioner Kramer for any comments that he wishes to make at the beginning of the hearing.
Bruce Gerhardson, Associate General Counsel for Otter Tail Corporation.
Brandine Brutlog.
And Randy Sinstelin.
Thank you. And we know that this is an important application from Otter Tail. There's already been some correspondence back and forth between the Commission and Otter Tail on this matter, and we've also had some input from staff as well. I know from reviewing the record that I still have a number of questions that I have about the proposal and looking forward to having getting those on the record and getting good answers to those today. So with that, Commissioner Kramer.
Well, I too look forward to supplementing the filed record, of course, with some questions and answers. Although I have to say and it's fun now to go back and actually look at my notes from February that I wrote because I've been anticipating this. In fact, I was reflecting a little bit earlier about the context in which we received this. Of course, we were all kind of going through the other cost of recovery challenge from the winter, which in many respects, I suppose, to a lot of people, and I know to a lot of people in the general public, became a distraction to this to some degree, and we received correspondence from people and heard comments from people, that were confusing. And yet I think it was kind of like the perfect light in which to view this, as weird as that might sound to some people. So I'm anxious to dig into it a little bit. I have to say that I looked at it very thoroughly when we first received it, and all in all, I'm impressed, but look forward to digging in deeper today. So thanks.
Okay. First, we'll go to Otter Tail, as we generally do in an informal hearing, to have you go through your proposal with the commission.
Okay. Thank you. Good afternoon, President Wiefald, Commissioner Kramer. I'm Brandine Brutlog, Manager of Regulatory Services for Otter Tail Power Company. As you heard in the introductions, I have with me Bruce Gerhardson, our Associate General Counsel, and Randy Sinstelin, who is Project and Planning Specialist in our Wind Development Department. Randy can answer any specific questions that you might have about this wind project. I'll briefly summarize Otter Tail's Renewable Resource Rider filing, but first let me give you a little background on the wind facility that brings about this discussion. The Langdon Wind Energy Facility is a 159-megawatt wind farm located just south of Langdon, North Dakota. The developer was FPL Energy. Some of the turbines in this project became operational in 2007, and the entire wind project was operational early in January of this year. There are three parts to this wind project. Minn Kota Power Cooperative has a 25-year power purchase agreement, or PPA, with FPLE for 99 megawatts. Otter Tail Power Company has a 25-year PPA for 19.5 megawatts, and Otter Tail owns 4.5 megawatts of the wind project. North Dakota rules allow the cost of the energy from the 19.5 megawatts that Otter Tail is taking under the PPA to be included in our fuel clause, similar to any other purchased energy. The current filing does not involve those costs. The portion of the project that we want to discuss today is the 40.5 megawatts that Otter Tail owns, and this is the basis for our request for cost recovery through the Renewable Resource Rider cost recovery mechanism. Otter Tail's integrated resource plan called for up to 160 megawatts of wind energy. Consequently, Otter Tail issued a request for proposals. We received 45 proposals, which we analyzed and compared. The Langdon Wind Project was actually negotiated separately from the proposals that we received, but the RFP process allowed Otter Tail to be confident that the Langdon Wind Project was extremely cost competitive with other wind projects. It is also cost competitive with marginal energy prices in the MISO market. And of course, the energy that Otter Tail receives from the Langdon Wind Project reduces the need for Otter Tail to purchase energy from the MISO market. Availability of this wind energy also reduces our control hours for customers on interruptible rates in some cases. The Renewable Resource Rider is designed to cover Otter Tail's revenue requirements through a rate applied to all retail energy sales. The calculation is based on the best information that we had at the time of the filing. In order to be sure that we are not over-collecting or under-collecting our revenue requirements on this project or on any future projects, we have set up a tracking account. This tracking account captures all of the costs related to the Otter Tail-owned Langdon Wind Project and will credit to it any of the revenue that we receive through the retail rates under this rider. Once a year, by September 1, Otter Tail will provide an update to its rate under this rider, with the new rate to become effective January 1 of the following year, subject to commission approval. The annual filing will include updated financial data on existing projects. Right now, that's Langdon Wind, and cost information for any project that we expect to be operational by January 1. We will maintain a tracker account for each wind project that we are including in the rider. This initial filing requests approval of a rate of 0.193 cents per kilowatt hour. This rate will increase the monthly bill for a customer using 750 kilowatt hours by $1.45. We have requested that the rider become effective in the month following the commission's order. I know that one of the considerations at this time is Otter Tail's existing fuel clause adjustment, which has been unusually high this past winter. If the commission were to approve our request at its May 7th meeting, the rider would go into effect in June. Otter Tail's FCA rate for June is projected to be just under a penny. And it's expected, and the FCA rate is expected to fall to around 0.6 cents beginning in July. This rider adds a little less than 0.2 cents to the energy price for customers. At this point, I'll be glad to try to answer any questions that you might have.
All right. I think we both have questions, and so how about if I start, Kevin, and ask a couple, and then we'll go to you, and then come back to me.
Go ahead and exhaust all of them.
Okay. I wrote them down. One of my concerns relates to your statement in your application that although this is a renewable generation rider, and you have the ability to put it on your bill separately, that you would like to put it in the fuel cost adjustment. And I'm concerned about that because I learned through the issues that came up with the fuel cost adjustment this winter that not all customers pay a fuel cost adjustment. There's a number of tariff customers that do not. And so that concerns me because generally, if this was part of a rate case, all customers would be paying in some way for the capital costs for this. And so I am real concerned that everyone, I would want everyone to pay for all the costs for this particular rider as well. So if it went on as a rider and we put it on everyone's bills, then everyone would pay. But if it goes through the fuel cost adjustment, right in our tariffs, it says certain customers do not pay fuel cost adjustment. And so therefore, I'm concerned about that.
Let me clarify. When we say it would be in the fuel clause adjustment, it would be in the number that's labeled as energy adjustment on the customer's bills. But the way we've designed this is it would be applied to all kilowatt hours sold to all retail customers, including those who don't currently pay the fuel clause. So they would end up seeing something on their bill that would say resource adjustment or perhaps rider adjustment. I haven't thought through what the language would be. But we intend that this would be applied to all sales and not just those that have the fuel clause available currently.
Right. And so if that's the case, why wouldn't it just be easier to have everyone see an additional line item, especially since you're thinking of adding to this if you have future projects that are renewable energy projects?
We don't object to having it separate. Here's our logic for putting it together. When I did this filing, I wasn't entirely sure how much flexibility our billing program had to separate it out. I now have learned that we can do that. We do have space on the bill and in our program to show renewable energy rider on the bill. There are other logic for treating it similar to the fuel clause and combining it with that and showing it like that is that if this were actually purchased energy in a PPA, it would be in the fuel clause. And so it's really just that we own it, so it's an ownership issue and how we get to the number. It looks so much like things that are in the fuel clause that we thought it was appropriate to combine it with that number. But we're totally fine either way.
Okay. All right.
Actually, the thought crossed my mind that are we doing the other correctly? Should we be separating that out a little bit differently? But, you know, but obviously that's maybe a discussion for another day. But.
Yeah. On how many years until all the costs are recovered? And on one page, page one of two, I don't know what filing that is, page one of two, it showed that the amount collectible is 1.193 cents per kilowatt hour in 2008.
Correct.
Now, does that depend on when we start the fuel this adjustment? Because I got some sense that if you start it later in the year, would there be a larger amount that you'd want to collect during this year? Or if we keep it at 0.193, then you said the next year it could be a larger amount. I need to have you go through those numbers, and let's find them on the chart so that we can all look at them and see exactly what will happen. And my first question is, I think attachment 2 shows for 2008 projected revenue.
That's right, That shows as though we had collected every month, just to give a sense.
Starting in January,
just to give you a sense of how it calculates out. And then the next page, and I have a little different version because I have.
We have this version that has all the trade secret information omitted.
Okay, I think the format's the same. I think the piece that you see at the bottom on line 40 is the same as what I see, and that's the rate. The 0.193.
Why does it go down every year?
It goes down, all else being the same, it would go down because the investment's being depreciated. So the rate base goes down a little bit each year.
It's not like making house payments where you pay the same amount for so many, 30 years, the same amount of money every single month?
No. It actually doesn't quite work that way. If we didn't add any more projects, it would, but it would still take 25 years. to collect all the costs, but it does go down in the early years because it's being depreciated, and there's some accelerated depreciation on this, too, that comes into play. getting back to your question on the rates, we calculated the rate as though we were collecting it for the entire year of 2008.
Yes.
Knowing that we won't get all the revenue, but we're not asking to change the rate for the remainder of 2008. I mean, this 0.93 cent that we're asking for would be the rate that we would put into effect the month following whenever the commission issues its order. But because we have this tracker account where we're gathering all the costs and we will credit against that the revenue, there will be some shortfall. So when we file in September, then we'll recalculate the rate that would take effect next year, and it would be slightly higher because we had 6 months of this year that we weren't able to collect.
Okay, so the actually the number for next year isn't actually going to be next year's number. It depends on when the commission starts this.
Correct. And it will depend on whether
and
or not.
And also the number for 2010 probably isn't the right number either.
No, those really won't be. I just showed a couple years there to see what the trend would be, all else remaining the same.
Now, you threw out a number of 25 years, and I had asked, because I didn't find in here anywhere, how many years we could expect to see this adjustment represented on customers' bills.
We have all of the depreciation, book depreciation, and the project life is considered to be 25 years. And so there would be a 25-year period when this would when there would be some revenue requirement for this project.
I'm curious about why there isn't a separate rider only until the next reg case is approved, and why you mentioned somewhere in your filing that you're going to get some credits and some toward this. You're going to have this group of costs for these wind turbines, but you're going to receive some credits that can offset certain costs, et cetera. And so that makes it convenient to keep them separate. But why couldn't that be a separate account? And why couldn't it be when we get to a rate case? Why wouldn't I can see your point of having a separate account up until the rate case. It's hard for me to understand why I have to have a separate line on the bill. Once we get to a rate case, the commission allows a rate of return in that rate case, and it would be folded into other capital costs that Otter Tail is also going to be having. And then we would just be, then people, that would be a part of their normal bill payment and not be a part of their fuel cost adjustment, because this is a capital cost, and there's no fuel. There's no fuel. So why shouldn't we put this in place only until the next rate case is approved?
I don't disagree with what you're saying. In fact, we thought about that. The only reason we suggested to keep the rider going is because of this over-under collection, and there are some credits, tax credits are coming in, both from the federal and the state for these projects, project by project.
Mm-hmm.
We just thought it would be cleaner accounting to keep it in a separate rider or a separate tracking account for each project. And when we true it up each year, neither the company is getting too much or the customers aren't paying too much for this. We could certainly roll it into a rate case. When we still plan to file a rate case later this year here in North Dakota, and we can certainly discuss whether or not that should be part of the rate case and rolled into the rate case. I think we're flexible on that. I don't have a strong reason one way or the other. So if that were the commission's desire, I think we could certainly work that out.
But there's nothing that would preclude you, either you or the commission or advocates in the next rate case, recommending any formula that would be different than what you're suggesting today. Right? I mean, once we have a rate case, it becomes a negotiating point anyway. It could.
And what I think I've seen in some of the Minnesota companies is who had riders.
Mm-hmm.
They took the riders and just took all the costs and all of the investment and everything and set that aside and then set rates in their general rate case for everything else. And so this rider went on over here on its own, standing on its own, you might say.
Sure.
I don't know if that's right or wrong, but it's just the way I'd seen it done. But certainly, if you put all into the rates in a rate case and it's a rate-based investment, that
you know,
can work too.
Is it possible that there's just because there's still boutique value to a quote, renewable rider, that there's some additional, I don't want to call it public relations, but just public interest that's served by having it separated out? I mean, is that cynical to think that
there's merit in a thought like that?
Well, I think that's a very reasonable thought. In fact, I think it's one of the reasons that we like to be able to say that, you know, we have this investment in wind, and even if it isn't a separate item on the bill, we'll probably still track it separately and be able to say we've got this investment in wind and this part of a customer's charge is wind, even if it's informally.
But
so,
of course, if it was mixed in with the fuel cost adjustment, then that isn't just renewables. It's your coal costs as well.
It's
a little harder to make that point if it's just rolled in.
If it's not separated on the bill
itself.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. So we would have the ability, if the commission wished, and again, we're probably going to have some discussion about this,
for sure.
To put in some language that could say something like, we could put in the separate rider until... But this would come up for discussion or something once we entered into the rate case with Ottertail to determine the best way to handle this cost at that time or something. How is the interconnection request with MISO proceeding? On the last page of your filing, see here, I'm just looking. It wasn't page 8. I read that you had... Oh, I know what it was. It was something about you've applied for the interconnection with MISO. This is in here. I don't know which page. You didn't receive the whole interconnection approval, so you're on kind of a temporary interconnection since the project was, you know, put forth and started in 2008, and you said that that temporary approval was for until May of this year, and then you would find out whether you had your full approval for the MISO interconnection or whether you needed to still go on a temporary approval. And, of course, I didn't write the page number here, and so I don't know what page that was.
Page 3 or page 4.
Page 3 or page 4.
Page 3 refers to the MISO.
Right. It's the bottom of the page 3 and the top of page 4. Ottertail has obtained short-term firm service through May. In the event the long-term request is not confirmed by June, we will request additional short-term firm service to cover us until the long-term service is approved. We've been hearing a lot about the queue and interconnection requests, and I was surprised that it had to go through MISO because I thought that this went through Minn Kota and didn't need an interconnection request from MISO.
I think it might be appropriate to just clarify the difference between an interconnection request and what is referenced here in the filing is a MISO transmission service request, which is different than an interconnection request.
Okay. So how are they different?
I won't claim to be an expert on that piece.
All right. With that disclaimer, go ahead.
You're as much an expert as anybody ever.
But there is a difference. This is getting transmission service through the MISO system to bring from the wind farm to our customers, which is different than plugging into the MISO system, because the interconnection for the Langdon Wind Farm is with Minn Kota.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought it was. Okay. So this is a transmission service request. Does this reflect then that, do they tell you then what your rates will be for transmission as part of that?
And again, I can't answer that one. I don't know the answer.
Jerry?
I would expect that they would be in Ottertail's load zone, and the load pays the transmission rate.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be Ottertail's zonal transmission rate.
Yeah, I kind of gather, and that would be consistent with, you know, with your previous...
And the transmission service request, too, because it would be going over Ottertail's transmission lines and the Ottertail's...
Right, Ottertail customers, and, yeah, that would be consistent. Makes sense.
All right.
We'll go with that theory for now.
And then page 7 of your filing... talked about subsequent filings. With subsequent annual filings, this is under Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Rider. It will provide cost recovery for future renewable projects as well. So what subsequent annual filings, and what would they include?
This was the filing that I mentioned in my opening remarks, that by each September 1, and that's kind of an internal deadline that we're putting on ourselves so that we can get an update to you by September 1, mm-hmm. giving the commission time to act on it so that we could put an updated rate in by January 1 of that following year. Mm-hmm. Again, what we would do is take a look at what are our costs that we've incurred, what is the revenues we've collected, and if we've got another project. We're trying to do another project this year yet, and if we were, you know, by the time we make that filing, we'll know whether that's going to be online by January 1. If it's going to be online by January 1, we would include those costs to the best we have available in that rate so that we could collect those costs during 2009 when it became operational. Mm-hmm. So that's the subsequent filings. And we would do that annually by September 1 every year and update our costs, mm-hmm. True up our costs, you might say, mm-hmm. each year.
You know, the questions that I've had, as you've been able to observe, are mainly technical questions about the filing. They don't relate to the big question of the prudency, all right? And I guess I have relied on staff to give recommendations to the commission about whether they feel that this is a prudent investment, because the information is basically trade secret, you know, that is out there. And one of the main things that I've considered as I've looked at this is that you had said that you had gone out for 160 megawatts of renewable energy, or only 40?
No, just clarification.
Yes.
In 2006, we issued a request for proposals, and the request was up to 75 megawatts of renewable energy.
Mm-hmm. Up to 75.
Up to 75, yes.
All right. And then you mentioned earlier, now Bernadine did, that you had received numerous responses to those requests, but that the FPLE was not one of those numerous requests. Are you able to tell us that the FPLE was the very lowest cost of all of those then that came in?
For the, there's a few factors involved in evaluating a request for a proposal. The ability of a company to bring it to the finish line, status of interconnection, and those items related to that. As far as addressing your question on lowest total cost, we believed it was the most feasible cost for a project to get completed.
So there could have, what I'm thinking, you say that again, it's the most feasible cost for a project that could be completed.
Correct.
So others may have come in at lower cost, but they had a longer timeline, or they may not have. They may have interconnected with MISO where it might have been 3 years or something like this. Is that it?
We actually pursued a number of projects that were lower cost, but were not able to reach the finish line as far as come to agreements.
When they put out a proposal, that's not a bid then that can be actually acted on?
The wind project has, there's a lot of pieces to reach the finish line, a lot of agreements, a lot of details. And
just like there are in any energy project.
Yep. And so that proposal is just that. It's a proposal, and the devil is always in the details, in working out those details.
Sure. But I think, you know, if we're being asked to consider this, Commissioner Wienfeld's question about Was the timeline, was that a major factor in not choosing a lower cost proposal?
Well, I think
that's right. That's my question.
Yeah, and I think those things were considered in trying to levelize the cost in order to do a cost comparison.
Okay.
The more important thing was things like risk shifting, if I may. So what would happen would be in an RFP, different people would say they'll take the risk of turbine failure or warranty risk on the turbines that are proposed to be used.
Yes.
In some of the proposals that Randy's referring to, the technology that was being proposed was not, and Randy, tell me if I'm going too far here.
You're doing fine.
That the technology that was being proposed was with turbines that were not tried and true. So they may not have had any, or may have had one turbine in the air from the manufacturer that was proposing to you for the proposals that were being made. The risks associated with those turbines could have been borne by the proposer, or the proposer could shift them to Otter Tail and hence Otter Tail's customers. Those things can take a project really out of qualification, even though the original proposal may have been quote-unquote lower cost. Sure. I think in the construction world, you might think of it in terms of a qualified bidder. And I think the usual language is the lowest cost qualified bidder. And while we don't use that language exactly here, I think that's roughly the same terminology.
Mm-hmm.
So what Randy is talking about, we actually pursued a couple of those projects and with vigor, and a great deal of resources were devoted to that. In the end, the risk of problems such as malfunction of the turbines on a turbine that was not reputable really allowed put us in a position we could not accept those proposals. In the end, the proposal that was accepted, I think, was the lowest cost feasible project, and that is, I think, what Randy's trying to get to, is here we have GE turbines there. Tried and true, we know what they're like, we've mm-hmm. used them in other projects that
right.
we've been involved in. The developer is reputable, has the resources we knew to complete the project on time. I don't know if I'm going on further, but really what we're talking about is you do have a very low cost, and I think staff will affirm this, a very low cost delivered kilowatt energy charge.
Yes.
While there may have been some bidders that had a technically a lower cost, they would not have been in the consumer's long-term interest because we could not assure that those risks wouldn't have come back to create additional costs. So
some of the things that you look that to summarize your discussion here, tell me if there's other factors as well. The technology is one. The risks that are imposed on the purchaser.
Correct. Risk shifting, and a lot of it ends up being risks of one kind or another. One might be in the technology, so that we end up with either warranty risk, sometimes mm-hmm. it's called, casualty risk. I mean, that could be that we harm
sure.
people. There's a financing risk. There are parties that would have proposed that we couldn't demonstrate, really, I think, whether they could bring the project in, that they didn't necessarily have the resources to do it. We had PTC risk.
What are they?
Production tax credit.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
In order to get mm-hmm. a project qualified for the production tax credit, it had to be installed.
By this year.
At the time we were bidding, or at the time we were reviewing proposals, I think that would have been.
Yeah, at that point, the when
extension
we were
about, hadn't occurred
extension
yet.
Hadn't occurred yet.
So a lot of those things, there's in fact a fair.
So you had to have available turbines, in other words.
We'd have available turbines. We'd have all the other labor force, everything had
sure.
to be demonstrated that the project could be brought in on schedule, or else we had the risk.
You guys, this is a question not specific probably to this project, but you raise a broader question of is there just such a barrier to entry into this industry that, you know, a couple of big dogs kind of have it all sewn up? Because if a new turbines never get to be tested or tried, and new developers never get to kind of enter, and again, I'm not saying that to pass judgment on your decision. I'm managing risk is what we're all about. But I've had that concern lately, and I just wonder if you know there's if I should be concerned. I guess
I'll just chime in. Obviously, this is a policy discussion that
it is.
You know, we're faced with the frank realities of trying to bring in the most prudent project for our consumers.
You bet.
And so things like a turbine manufacturer that's got some history is going to have in a sense, a leg up on one that doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and we're not saying that can't be overcome.
Sure.
But that new entrant probably is going to have to demonstrate that they can bear the risk of their new product
mm-hmm.
In a different way. I don't know, Randy, if I'm speaking.
That's good.
So is there a barrier to new entrants, just like there is in every industry? I think there is. Can those be overcome? Yes, at times it can be. oftentimes the risk shifting, that's what us lawyers are
No, I like that term.
To do,
I understand.
To prevent these unintended risks from shifting to us and our customers.
Yeah,
so there are a number of other factors. Just like when the commission evaluates bids, we have cost is one factor when we do an RFP. And we have other factors that we're looking at, best qualified, et cetera. I mean, there's a whole list of them, and cost is one factor, but not the only one. And that's what you're saying as well, as you make a determination about, though the commission's always concerned about cost, we know reliability is important because of our responsibility to ratepayers.
That's correct. I think in the end it all comes down to cost, in a way.
Well, it does, ultimate cost, sure.
If a risk is shifted to Otter Tail and hence its consumers, in the end it's a cost risk.
Mm-hmm.
And so to some extent you balance this. Now, I will also point out, if I may, just that when we get proposals on a request like the one Randy's talking about, the proposals come, they're not meeting a technical specification as closely as you will deliver X number of megawatts for X number of years, and that every proposal lines up that way. They come in, some of them are going to give us 5 years of 10 megawatts, some of them are going to give us 25 at 75. So how do you evaluate the smaller one and the shorter duration against the longer one? There's a very sophisticated methodology that these guys use to develop sort of a levelized, what is the, in the end, the price per kilowatt hour and what's the value over.
And basically the bids that you did receive on that request for proposal helped you to evaluate the one that you finally did choose.
Absolutely.
Even though it wasn't a part of that package, you became aware of this project. You were then able to evaluate that in comparison to these others. Was there any problem with you choosing one that you did not have that did not come in with the proposals?
I'm not sure if I understand the question.
You had asked for a proposal. You had a number of projects that responded to your proposal. Then you chose one that did not come in as a part of your response.
I should also clarify that we are still in negotiations with some of those particular projects that are part of that request for proposal.
For additional projects.
So.
And you're able to always just go outside your proposal process to just pick another one if you like it.
We're not constrained in the way.
Not the way we are.
There is no constraint on us continuing to pursue additional projects. This one presented itself as Mr. Sicily pointed out, as part of our discussions that emanated from that request for proposal. There is no constraint.
Okay, you have an open door.
We will continue to seek the most prudent project. And in this case, we believe we got the one that was the most prudent in this instance.
Why? I have one more question.
No, absolutely, go ahead.
It says the assumed return on equity invested in the Langdon Wind Farm is 11.25%. Just tell me where that comes from. Is that, maybe I ask this as staff, is that because this was their return on equity from their last rate case? Does it have anything to do with the rate case? Is it just they're asking for this return on this particular project? And could, if this became a part of the future rate case, then that would have an ability to change? Or tell me about the 11.25%.
Sure. I didn't ask them where it came from. I just looked at it as whether or not it was reasonable or not. And as I mentioned in my memo, we've just settled with Xcel Energy and their rate increase application for 10.75. Is it 11 and a quarter? 11 and a quarter here. And I just thought, I don't think that's unreasonable. They took on some risk here. Rather than just doing what so many other companies do, just buy power, whatever the cost is, or run it through the fuel cost adjustment. They took an initiative here to do something better than that. And so, in my mind, it was worth a half a point.
This is not their old rate case rate return, because that's around 14, isn't it?
Yeah, I just didn't look at that at all.
This is, but I'll ask Otter Tail then. This is a separate rate of return that you're asking for on this that's just identified with this project specifically?
Yes. The 1982 rate case had 14.5% ROE, and we thought that might not be appropriate today. quite frankly, the 11.25 came from the ROE that we asked for in our current Minnesota rate case. And rather than try to develop some study that showed a different number, we used that number. We'll be filing a rate case later this year. How this ROE on a separate project may or may not be the same as what we're eventually allowed in the rate case.
Sure.
But because we had no other indication of an appropriate number, I used the 11.25.
All right. That answers the that takes care of the questions I have on this project right now. Kevin?
Well, I think Susan asked, especially the first couple were ones that I had as well, and then chimed in when I had additional questions, so I don't really have a lot more. I would say a couple of things. Let me say a couple of things. First of all, I don't really worry much about whether in this order, whether we reference a future rate case. And I think when there's a future rate case, all options are on the table, whether we state they are today or not. So, I don't know how we'll word that, but we'll discuss that. And I don't know exactly what the levelized costs are at Langdon, but I do know this much. And this is what was plain to me when reading your filing, that first of all, our policymakers in North Dakota have made it clear that they want to incent investment in conversion facilities, energy conversion facilities in North Dakota. I mean, in addition to the production tax credit, it doesn't take a genius accountant to figure out with the North Dakota investment tax credit, some of the other policies that they want you to build in North Dakota. So, as well as the presumption of prudence, and I don't know. I appreciate your explanation of the RFP process. It would seem to me, just for what it's worth, that we'd be hard pressed to make a case that this wasn't prudent. So, I don't know that we would be able. We could bear that burden, but at any rate, I guess the bottom line for me is that. It looks to me like to be consistent with other policymakers in this state, that all the incentive so far has been to purchase power wherever it might be generated, and they have said no, we want to create additional incentive to build in North Dakota, and you all seem to have done a very, very fine job of making that both good for North Dakota's economy and prudent for your ratepayers. So I appreciate that.
Steph, do you have any questions that you would like to bring up this time? Jerry had one, I know, on his under his recommendations. Was that Mike? Okay. Mike, was that with regard to cost recovery, staff recommends full cost recovery but believes that it should be deferred until the cost of energy adjustment returns to normal levels.
Well, I guess it sounds like we're about there.
Does that sound about right
there
when they're talking in June?
Made sense when I wrote
June?
It that things have changed or are changing quickly. So I think June, is that, it goes down to I think Bernadine said a 6/10 of a kilowatt hour?
In July.
Or in July, okay.
June was about a penny or just under.
A penny.
Yeah.
I mean, we've just come from 2 cents, so.
That's in addition to what's in their base cost, but still it is much lower. And also we have the people use a lot of energy for air conditioning in the summertime, but it is more normal.
I would make this observation, though, when you're wrestling with whether you want to require this in the next rate case. Those first 10 years with the production tax credit, as staff, if I'm doing the rate case, I'm not going to ask for that to be in the rate case. I don't want to lock in at a higher rate and then their revenue requirements go down $500,000 the next year and another $500,000 the next year after that. So
it's a good point.
I like the writer.
Is that because of depreciation?
Well, it'd be some of it, but it's also because of you get that production tax credit, I think, for 10 years in a row, right?
So
So
the same for all 10 years?
Well, I don't.
I could clarify on that. It is a production credit, and what it means is it's based on whatever energy is produced on that. So it's an after the fact. You aren't going to know in advance how many megawatts.
I have a question about that.
He's got the same question I do.
What is it? Is it 2 cents per kilowatt hour? I've heard everything 1.7, 1.9, 2 cents. I don't know if people are just rounding it up.
It's for 2008. It's 2 cents.
Okay.
But it
right
is
right at 2 cents, not 1.9.
Last year's it
accelerates.
It has an inflation adjusted.
So for 2008, it's around. It is not just a round two. It's two.
It's two.
How about what was 2007 then? Do you know?
That was 1.9.
1.9.
Okay, and then it's based on how many kilowatt hours are actually produced?
Actually generated. That's
generated.
Correct.
Yep. And then you get a credit.
Correct. It's a federal production tax credit.
Credit. Mm-hmm. Yep. That you apply for then towards your next income tax that you owe.
Correct.
Would it be trade secret type information if we ask for the difference between, since we have, you know, we have one where you're purchasing and one where you're owning. The difference, the cost differential on a levelized kilowatt hour basis between the one contract and what you managed to accomplish by doing the engineer develop. I think it'd
so
be.
We wouldn't need to see either. We'd only need to see the difference.
I think that would be very valuable.
But we're really good at math.
I'd sure like to hear it.
Do you want to talk about it in a moment?
Pardon?
About it at the moment.
I think we should.
If you don't mind, if I just could take one
sure.
minute.
No, that's fine.
Randy, about that. I haven't thought about that, so let me talk to him about that.
From a policy perspective, it'd be helpful, I think.
Understand. Okay. Let me just. If it, do you mind just breaking?
No, we'll
that's
take
fine.
A break for 5 minutes. Thank you. And then we should be about ready to finish.
Great if we could get that one.
Well, just leave the. You can leave the.
Damn generous! I'm telling you this. All this. What's what's income tax credit for North Dakota, Jerry? What does that add up? What is that? You know what it is? The investment tax credit that the.
Yeah, there's a credit when you buy.
That's right.
In the state, and I think if they get the stuff from DMI, it's a better credit or something.
Oh, is that right? Okay, yeah.
There's some different credits that were put in a couple of sessions ago, and I'm not able to quantify them.
It ends up being so generous when you package it all up. Well, right, right. That's why there's the DMI advantage. Or if you use LM glass fiber, I suppose. LM glass, there were convoys of LM glass fiber, you know.
But it's hard for me to understand why, if you allowed a certain amount in the rate case, why it wouldn't stay that level for at least 10 years. I mean, I know the production tax credit has an inflation thing on it.
Yeah, you would put the book value of the assets under rate base, and they would be depreciated with the rest of the depreciation expenses, and they get back their depreciation expense. And then there would be a tax credit. Normally when we do what's in rate base and what income taxes they're paying and stuff like that, we say as a factor of like, 1.6 or something like that. But here we have a tax credit that is going to be so much a kilowatt hour actually produced. So we're left with trying to estimate what that production is and what that tax effect would be on the.
That, yeah, I can see that.
I see. All right. Well, it'd be interesting.
At least that's what I think was. Yeah.
Because it's dependent on the wind resource itself.
Yeah. And they can forecast that somewhat based on what their past has been, but it differs from year to year and
right.
the weather.
Right. Well, I mean, literally.
Yeah.
Do they need a little more time?
But, you know, I think more importantly is that we're not precluding that kind of treatment when we get to the rate case at this
right.
point.
Mm-hmm.
When they do these kinds of deals, there's lots of confidentiality agreements signed, not between them and FPS.
Sure.
And so somebody in Otter Tail Land is checking
and
that.
And you would expect that
move the microphone closer to Jerry right now.
You would expect some kind of a consideration on what it costs the developer to go into what their asking price is. And so if the developer is doing it, then they get a tax credit, a production tax credit on it too. If they can use it all is another consideration, and so it gets complicated.
Well, I suppose it'll be interesting to just see how it could pan out either way or whatever.
One thing about the last session when they did ultimately allow the transfer of the investment tax credit to partners within the project. In other words, an FPL who doesn't pay income tax in North Dakota can sell their tax credit to Otter Tail who does, as long as Otter Tail is purchasing the power.
Yeah, I remember something like that somewhere. Yeah. Hearing it.
I'm going to ask, I think that's right. Come back on. I don't think you have anywhere in here what the cost is per person per month, an average user.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I think it is. Oh, it's in something. Like a $1.45.
Yep. $1.45
for 750 megawatts.
Okay.
Which, near as we can tell, maybe. I don't know if that's the normal user anymore.
If we had 0.2 cents per kilowatt hour, at 750 kilowatt hours, what's that come to? Penny and a half.
Okay.
A dollar and a half.
Ten times that, yeah. Three,
yeah.
Four times
that. Well, we know it.
Mm-hmm. But they get to do it with wind energy.
Yes, lucky them. As far as they know.
Are we on the... Okay, I'll ask this question when they come back in. I think we're just about ready then.
I think we're ready.
Okay, go ahead. We're going to start the meeting again.
Okay. I think what we can do at this point, I think what we can give with some confidence here, is a percentage figure, in a sense, the cost on a levelized basis, and there is some levelizing that is going because the
Certainly.
Nature of these things is somewhat different, but it's about a 10% cost differential, meaning that the owned portion is about 10% less per kilowatt hour on a levelized basis than the purchased. Is that a fair way to get at
that's fair.
That's helpful to us, and I think it's helpful for us to be able to include in our whatever we issue about this, just to give people a sense of what we're doing here.
You know, one other thing I'd say, too, that I should have probably said earlier, is along the lines of Commissioner Weefall's questioning regarding the disclosure of it on the bill, and I appreciate, Bernadine, that since the filing, you realize that your system would allow a separate. I do think there's merit in that, not only for the reasons I stated earlier relating to just the transparency to the public value, but that transparency won't always be viewed favorably, I suspect, by every member of the public. Everybody has their own view of renewable power and paying a tariff for it and all of that. Although I think by and large, people would appreciate knowing it, I guess, and simply knowing it, as opposed to having to dig for it. So, I guess that's. I suppose my mind could be changed, but I appreciate it at least the fact that your system could handle it.
On the actual tariff language that you filed, I think it's always important to take a look at that. Is that's on attachment 4 of your draft? So, is there anything at this time that we think is going to need to be changed on that specific tariff language? It's called the Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Rider, application of rider applicable to electric service under all the company's retail rate schedules. So that's there. And then the cost recovery factor. There should be included on each North Dakota's monthly bill a renewable resource cost recovery, which shall be the renewable resource cost recovery factor multiplied by all the customer's monthly billing KWH for electric service. So this was interesting to me because even a very large commercial customer is going to pay the very same rate per kilowatt hour as a residential customer. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Just wanted to make sure I had that straight.
That's correct. Because the energy, they pay the same fuel clause. The cost of energy is essentially the same for any customer, whether large or small.
Mm.
The demand part is what changes, what makes
right.
a difference for larger customers. But the energy cost is very similar.
Okay. All right. and this renewable resource cost should be calculated before any applicable municipal payment adjustment entails sales taxes. So just explain to me what that says, before any applicable municipal payment adjustments.
We have some, this is old language that goes back a long time, but I believe it has to do with franchise fees or things like that that some of our municipalities impose on us, and we treat them like sales tax. We collect them for the municipality and pass it on to the municipality.
As provided in the general rules and regulations for the company's electric service, the renewable resource cost adjustment shall be in addition to all charges for services being taken under the company's standard rate schedules. So basically that just says this is an adder to everything else that's on the bill already,
right,
or whatever. Okay, and then you have the rate for 2008, and then that would be updated yearly.
Correct.
Is that the kind of information that we would receive a supplemental information on? This tariff would be updated on a yearly basis.
Correct.
With the current rate. Okay, that's very, it's very simple, in the tariff. I have no further questions. Kevin?
No, nor do I, thank you. No.
Staff, do you have any further questions? Mike?
No, I was just wondering, though, are we close enough that we could just do the work section?
No, we aren't. We aren't because Tony's not here. Okay. If he was, if he was, I'd say
well,
yes.
We do need to hold a work session on this, and I anticipate it could perhaps be next week, though, if we can find a time to do that, so that we would be able to put it on the next meeting agenda.
Because you want it in June, right?
But we know that we're all busy on Monday and Tuesday all day long, and then Thursday, I believe we have a case that is on the agenda as well. That's the one, isn't Thursday the day we go out to Delhi City? Yes.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yes, it is.
May 1st, yeah, sure it is.
Wednesday and
Friday, May 2nd.
May
2nd.
Yeah. So I think in Thursday and Friday there's something else. I mean, so we have a busy schedule next week. We'll do our best.
Let's just settle the Monday, Tuesday one now, and then we can free those days up.
Anyway. All right, now.
That'd be okay with
so
it.
So the commission will work on getting that work session scheduled so that we can get that on the next agenda if possible. All right, any further questions from Jerry? All right. Alana, do you have any? All right. Tom, do you have any? All right. And then I'd like to introduce you to our newest employee. And this is Janet Marquardt. And Janet's going to be working in our Public Utilities Division. And, Janet, these folks you'll be hearing from, okay? And so... Have them all introduce themselves to you, because these are the kind of people who interact with Public Utilities Division from industry on a regular basis. Okay? You're a very key person in that division.
And okay? Don't take any guff from them.
All right. Okay. Thank you. That closes the hearing today on case number PU06466. Thank you.
Here, I'll give you my business.